welcome to Zion Teacher Series, which is presented by Zion Fellowship International. Zion Fellowship is a Christian fellowship of churches and Bible schools located in the US, Canada, and around the globe. Our featured speaker is Dr. Brian J. Bailey, the president of Zion Fellowship International. Dr. Bailey is an international Bible teacher, and in more than 50 years of ministry, he has traveled to over 100 countries, ministering in churches, pastors' seminars, and Bible schools. He is a prolific author of over 50 books. Our topic is wisdom literature, which refers to two of the books that King Solomon wrote, the book of Proverbs, which is filled with detailed instructions on daily living, and the book of Ecclesiastes, which shows us the true values in life. Join us today as we open our hearts to what the Lord has to say from wisdom literature.
Welcome again to our studies on wisdom literature. As we've said before, wisdom literature comprises basically two books, the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes, both written by King Solomon. The first nine chapters of Proverbs is actually a record of the teachings of David to Solomon in his formative years. And then afterwards we have the actual Proverbs of King Solomon. Now, King Solomon was claimed to be the wisest man who ever lived, and certainly his teachings are far above the average in morality, integrity, and, of course, in ethics, and, may we say, in wisdom. But we are going to look now in Proverbs chapter 5, and in this chapter, King David is going to address King Solomon, and he starts off, you know, my son. And basically, Solomon was the only son of King David. He had many sons, but really Solomon was the key, because God had designated him to be the heir and the one that would indeed sit upon the throne after David had died. And so David is very concerned about the instructions that he gives to Solomon, that Solomon will not fail. But we're going to look at this, and as we have looked at the previous four chapters, we find a certain theme running through these instructions to Solomon. And the pattern is almost the same. And we start off with my son. You see, my son, you know, there's such an endearment there. You know, David, almost in pathos, is saying to Solomon, but you are my son, and I want you to succeed. Well, what does he say? You see, my son, attend to my wisdom. In other words, David wanted to implant into the heart of King Solomon wisdom. Because, as we've seen in chapter 4, David said to Solomon, wisdom is the principal thing. And with all thy getting, get wisdom, get understanding. And now he's saying to Solomon, look, listen to my wisdom. I've been on the throne for so many years, from the age of 30, and now I'm in my late 60s. I've been on the throne perhaps over 35 years. And he said, during that time, with my rapport with the Lord, I've learned a lot of wisdom. And I want you to listen to my wisdom, to keep my wisdom, to take heed of what I say. And then also, you see, he says, and also my understanding. So David said, look, I have wisdom, I have understanding, and I want to impart it to you. And I think that's what every parent should seek to do for their children. You know, to acquire wisdom, to acquire understanding themselves, because they've lived so many years more than their children. And during that time, they've acquired a lot of instruction. And that instruction should be imparted to the children. In fact, that was God's admonition to the children of Israel. He said, look, the laws that I give you, the instruction that I have implanted in your hearts, I want you to transmit that to your children. You know, we first learn and we first have our real schooling at the knees of our parents. And our parents, you know, have a lot of wisdom because of the length of days they've lived, and we should listen to them. Now, unfortunately, you see, King Solomon heard all these things, but he didn't apply them to his heart. And now, what is David saying? He said, you know, if you will listen to my wisdom and my understanding, then you will have discretion. Discretion. And discretion, you know, is to be very careful what you do, so that you think before you act, and you think of the consequences of your actions. And so King David said, now, look, if you listen to my wisdom, listen to my understanding, you will have discretion. And then he goes on to say this, you know, keep knowledge. And that's one of the things he kept emphasizing throughout these 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs. He kept emphasizing, look, what you have received, keep, 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 keep. And that is one of the sad things in life. We might, you know, acquire truth, but do we keep it? We might have our feet put upon the path of righteousness, but do we stay there? We might have the habit of going to church every Sunday or perhaps Wednesday evening too. And it's wonderful when we're young, but do we stay on the path? Do we stay on the path? That is the question. Do we stay on the path? It's not how we begun, but it is how we end life that counts. And that is going to be one of the greatest instructions that we are going to learn in this session. You see, King David said to King Solomon, keep the commandments. Keep understanding. Don't lose what I'm giving to you. And then he switches, as he so often does, and gives a warning concerning the strange woman. The strange woman. Now, he gives many examples in this book of Proverbs. Examples that he hopes Solomon will take to his heart. And he speaks of a young man who did not indeed stay on the path. But this young man veered and turned away from the pathway of life, the pathway of wisdom, the pathway of instruction of his teachers. And he ends up, we are told by King David, mourning, being sad. And he said, at the end of my life, and he's still young, this young man, he said, I'm mourning. I did not keep, I did not heed the instruction of my teachers. And I'm going to give an illustration of this, which was given in a dream to John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress. Now, Pilgrim's Progress is a book that is the most read, with the exception of the Bible. It's printed in so many languages. And it was given in the 17th century, that's the 1600 odds, to a man, a young man, by the name of John Bunyan in England. And John Bunyan was converted through an exceptional dream that he was given, and shown that his idle life would only take him into hell. He was shown hell. And because of that, He converted to Christianity. He got saved. He got born again. And he started preaching. But in those days, in the reign of King Charles II, you know, it was forbidden to preach unless you were in the established church, the Anglican church. And so John Bunyan was put in prison for his obedience to the Lord in preaching. And during the 12 years that he was in prison, God gave him this exceptional dream that continued night after night until the book of Pilgrim's Progress was written. Now, I'm not going into the whole book, obviously, but I want to go into one portion of the book, an illustration that's very important indeed. And in this dream, there is Christian, one who has been converted, and now he is being shown the pathway of life. And he comes to a person who's called the interpreter. And the interpreter says, well, before you continue your Christian life, I want to show you certain truths. And these certain truths were contained in a house, if I could say this, and many rooms in this house. And one of them, in particular, was very dark. And Christian entered this room with the interpreter, and he saw a huge iron cage, And in that iron cage, there was a young man who kept sighing very sorrowfully, mourning and holding his head down. And Christian said to the interpreter, well, what means this? The interpreter said, you ask that young man, he has to reply to you. And so Christian says to the young man, what does it mean that you are in this iron cage? And so this young man responds, and this is what the young man said. He said, I was, when I was very young, a Christian. I got converted. I accepted the Lord Jesus. I started to preach. I started to witness. And he said, all those around me thought I was well on the way to heaven and would be well rewarded by the Lord for my life, which was exemplary. But then, he said, I threw off caution. I threw off discretion. And I started to wander from the pathway of righteousness. I went into this sin. I went into that sin. And he said, sooner or later, he said, I was tasting the pleasures of this world. And he said, the thing is this, I turned against the Lord and I ignored his warnings and I continued on that slippery path. And he said, the time came when I tried to get back, but the Lord would not hear me. I had crucified afresh the Lord of glory. And so he said, there's no hope for me. And he said, there's a fearful judgment that awaits me. And the interpreter said to Christian, now remember that. He started well, but he turned aside. And he could not get back. Now, we do not want to do that. We don't want to leave the pathway of righteousness. We don't want to taste the pleasures of sin of this world. For in tasting those things, we are tempting the Lord of glory ourselves and thinking, oh, well, I can get back when I want to. Oh, yes. I have known many young people who have been warned and warned and warned, and they have left the pathway of righteousness. And then they have said, after all these warnings, well, we'll come back. Do they come back? No, they can't. They can't come back. and a fearful judgment awaits them. Well, you know, this young man in Proverbs chapter 5, he said, I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation. He was continuing, you know, to go to church, and yet he was tasting the pleasures of this world. And eventually, of course, he was away from God, and a fearful judgment awaited him. Now, you know, the admonition is from King David, well, rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Don't turn aside to the strange woman, because she will destroy you. And her chambers are the chambers of death. Her end is hell. Now then, I want to give another illustration. And this illustration took place in the 18th century. And the illustration is of 8 pictures painted by William Hogarth, the English painter, in 1732 to 1733. In these 2 years, he painted 8 pictures. And he entitled these 8 pictures, The Rake's Progress. Now, actually what happened was, there was a man that he knew, Tom Rakewell. And these pictures depict the life of Tom Rakewell. And he called it The Rake's Progress, something that's very well known in England. And I would not have entitled it The Rake's Progress. I would have entitled it The Rake's Decline. But here are the 8 pictures that Hogarth painted. And they have remained famous to this very day. Well over 250 years later, here his pictures are very well known and hung in the best museums in England. Now then, what do they consist of? Well, the first one is a picture of the heir, Tom Rakewell as the heir. And let me explain that. He had a father who was very miserly, who hoarded his money, and of course in those days the money was gold and silver. And he hoarded the money in the walls of this house, which was very derelict, rustic, and so forth. Not to be desired. He wouldn't spend any money even on his house. But he put the money in the walls and under the floors of this house. Well, it came the time when he died. And so the lawyer, reading the will, said, well, Tom, you inherit everything that your father left. And so the first picture is of Tom in his father's house, and the walls are being broken down, and the floors and so forth, and all the treasure that his father had accumulated is being shown. Well, the next picture is called the levy, which basically in those days was, shall I say, a party that took place in the morning about 10 o'clock in a rich man's house. And all the friends and all the notables of the village were indeed invited. And so we see Tom now resplendent in a mansion. He's paid a large sum of money for this mansion. He is dressed like a nobleman, and all the dignitaries of the village are there in this picture. Now, the next one is on his descent. He now casts off all restraint, and he is in this picture in an orgy. In other words, drunken, eating at a banquet and so forth, but surrounded by prostitutes, surrounded by prostitutes. He is on his way down. And of course, he hasn't been careful with his money, and he's left it to the prostitutes and so forth, and they have robbed him and so forth. And now, the next picture is Tom being arrested on his way to Queen Caroline, that was the reigning queen at that time, Queen Caroline's birthday party. But the police catch him, and as he is being taken to the palace, they arrest him for his debts, and someone kindly pays his debts. In fact, a young woman whom he knew before he even became the heir and had a baby by him, she remains faithful to him and indeed pays his debts. Then the next picture is he marries an old hag, a woman who is most undesirable, very old, but he marries her for her fortune. So now he gets a second fortune. But what happens? Does he have the sense to remember that he has to be discreet, that he has to be cautious? There's not just sufficient to have a fortune. The all-important thing is to keep it. And the only way you keep it is by diligence and walking on the pathway of good men. Well, did he learn his lesson? Oh, no. What did he do now? Well, the next picture shows him, and this is picture number 6, gambling. And he is in the den of the gamblers, and there he is in a very pitiful situation that he's gambled away the second fortune. You see, if you do not stay on the pathway of righteousness, there are all these adducements that Satan puts around a person to indeed bring them down into poverty, bring them down into terrible states of ill health. And that is exactly what happened to Tom. Because the seventh portrait is he is now in the debtor's prison. He is now in the debtor's prison. And is surrounded by other people who in like manner, you know, have dissipated the money that they had received and didn't stay on the pathway of righteousness, weren't diligent, weren't careful, weren't discreet. And they too have ended up in this prison that they had in those times in England, specifically for debtors. And the idea was that they remained there until they could raise money to pay off their debts. And this they did through their friends and so forth. But Tom, you see, had indeed forsaken all that. And he had no friends. And nobody was willing to help him get out of that prison. And so we have this terrible portrait of Tom in the debtor's prison. But we said there weren't just 7 portraits, there were 8. And what is the 8th one? Well, the 8th one is the worst of all, of course. We find him in what is called Bedlam. It is essentially a prison for those who, shall I say, were in delusion. They lost their mind. And so you have a picture of Tom. He now has virtually no clothing on at all, virtually naked. And this young girl, this one who's remained faithful to him, is looking after him. And he is surrounded by fools who think they are kings, think they are archbishops and so forth. And it's basically the prison for the insane. And in this portrait, there are two society ladies who have come. And that was the habit of those days, that often on a Sunday afternoon, people would visit the insane asylum, and they would look at the spectacles of those who were once wealthy, once normal, and there they saw the degradation that took place of those that left the path of righteousness. And that was their amusement in the afternoon. Well, we come to the close of this session. And all that we would learn from the admonition of King David, that we would not be like this young man, whether it be Tom Brakewell or somebody that King David had observed, or the one that John Bunyan was shown in this dream by the interpreter, but we would be wise, and we would listen to the word of God, and we would have understanding that, you know, in life we are to find the narrow way. We are to come to Christ, and we are to walk on the pathway of righteousness, and we are to keep on the path, and we are not to turn to the right or to the left, because Satan will get us. And we will end up as that young man, mourning at the end, instead of having the joy and rejoicing that the Apostle Paul could have when he said, henceforth a crown of righteousness is awaiting me. So I would admonish you, stay on the path. Remember the rake's progress. Remember this young man mourning at the end. Oh, please, stay on the path of righteousness, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, and then the end of your life will be one of joy. God bless you.